This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey folks, and welcome to the Pro Wrestling Super Show, and I don't remember what number, so we're going to skip that part, but it's been a while, so we're allowed mistakes, and how are you doing, Tim?
Hi, Steven. By the way, Skype says the last time that we had a podcast was WrestleMania weekend when we finished off the Greatest Wrestler Ever Top 100 10-hour extravaganza.
That's not right, because we did that one with Devin Hills.
That's correct. So then where the heck, what the hell, Skype? What are you telling us? I might have done that on my Windows computer. Never mind. But yeah, so it's been a while. That's great. Yeah, Devin was on with us. That was fun.
It's been a while, so we have re-evaluated how we're going to do this show. And instead of just trying to get one when we can, which seems to be every 8 months, what we're going to do is live up to the Super Show name and do one every WWF Big Four pay-per-view weekend. So
Right. This
is our Royal Rumble show. And when you think of the Royal Rumble, you obviously think of great baby faces. So we're doing top 10 baby faces. And who better to talk to that about than Elliot? How you doing?
I'm doing good. How's it going, Steven? How's it going, Tim? I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk baby faces.
Very happy to have you, Elliot. We are going to be talking baby faces. Very much so going to also be talking about why or why not Greg Gagne should be on all of our lists. I'm pretty sure that's going to be something we will talk about a lot.
Yeah, and Elliot, this was your idea, right? So why do you want to talk about this?
Well, you know, there's so much darkness in the world right now that I thought it was really important for us to celebrate joy some time out and think about the things that make us feel good.
America needs the Hulk up. That is for damn sure.
Yeah, and I'm a week away from going to America, and I'm a little scared. So maybe this will make me feel a little bit better.
You might be able to get in, but once you're here, we might not let you leave.
Well, there'll be a wall or something.
Although we won't get into that. Let's not talk about that for
let's,
sure.
Let's talk about joy.
Let's talk about joy.
So Let's start with my number 10. This might be the most joyful wrestler on any of our lists. And it's definitely the smallest wrestler on any of our lists. It's Masquerita Dorada.
Nice, yeah.
Who you might know as El Torito.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, one of the best spot high-flying wrestlers there are, which is something that a babyface needs, is some great-looking spots to get the crowd into him. However, what Dorada has that a lot of wrestlers don't have is that he's incredibly tiny. And he's so tiny that any one he's facing is a massive villain, because they can pick him up and throw him any way they want. They're massive, they're huge, and he's great at selling and getting that over. So any Dorada match is a great match. Check him out in CMLL, AAA, his touring indie matches, which are great. And you know those El Torito Hornswoggle matches, the WLC, were also really great at spotlighting how awesome Dorada is. So I assume everyone else has him higher on their list. But I don't know. Is anyone, maybe not. And if you guys don't, if you have anything to add about Torada, you might be your last chance.
I like the viewers matches. That's all.
No,
he's great. He is. I didn't think of him as a baby face for this list. But yeah, no, he is. He's very good. I love me some Masquerita for sure.
Is WLC the best pre-match or pre-show match in WWE pay-per-view or special event, whatever they're calling them now, history?
Easily.
It's got to be, right?
Easily.
Yeah. It's certainly the only one that you remember by the time the show has ended.
Yeah, yeah. And the only one that, like, it's worthwhile to go back and, like, oh, I didn't watch the pre-show. Maybe I should watch it. And, like, that's the only time I think I went out of my way to be like, oh, shit, I got to go back and watch the pre-show. So, good for them. But yeah. How about we leave Elliot for the main event spot. And, Tim, who do you got?
So, I have Jerry Lawler at 10. Fired up Memphis babyface Jerry Lawler is quite possibly my favorite Jerry Lawler. But he is such a good heel that I kind of want to knock him down the list a little bit. But I mean, the fists of fire in the corner, the way he sells for when the incoming monster heals, stuff like that, the defender of Memphis turf. I think that I could have him higher on this list if I really wanted to, but I kind of went after virtuous baby faces. I'm kind of the virtuous baby face type, guy. In fact, like the last one I cut off was Bruno, just because I wanted him on there. But when I thought about the other guys I definitely wanted on here, it's like, it was kind of hard for me to say no to some of these guys. And I wanted to get Lawler on here just because, like, fired up babyface Jerry Lawler is one of my favorite things in the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah, I'll add some thoughts about Jerry Lawler later. How about you, Elliot?
I will also add Jerry Lawler thoughts later.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So, okay. Who do you got?
Yeah, most definitely. All right, so my number 10 is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes.
Oh. Very nice. He was also one of those guys that I was very, very close on having on my list, so.
Dusty was somebody that actually moved down in my first draft of the list. I had him at like number 6 or something like that. Like, he was always going to make it. I really wanted to give a lot of credit towards like in-ring work and things like that, but there's more to being a babyface than just being a great worker. And so I wanted to have at least one guy on there, and not to say that Dusty wasn't great, because Dusty was great. I love Dusty. But really, this is about the promos, and this is about the connection to the crowd. That's the most important thing for being a babyface, is connecting to the crowd on a real visceral level. And Dusty did that like few others in wrestling history. I always think of the Superstar Graham comment where he always talks about how he could have turned babyface and been Stone Cold Steve Austin in the 70s. I always look at Dusty as like the Rock for the 1970s. Just the coolest motherfucker you've ever seen, can say the goofiest, most ridiculous things, and somehow they sound awesome. Can do these preposterous, goofy-ass things in the ring, and they always look cool. Dusty Rhodes absolutely had to make my list. One of the best bleeders ever, too, which is important for being a babyface. Bleeding your ass off.
It really is. and he's really great, and he gathers that sympathy so well. But my list is not very good, so he's not on my list.
Oh, yeah, these lists are terrible. Well, I mean, me and Steven are. Elliot's is probably really good, but they're probably terrible, so.
You don't have Dusty either, Tim?
No, Dusty was one of the guys that was very close to being on my list. But it was just like, you know, like I said, the virtuous baby face is my favorite baby face. And so this list is just going to be a whole bunch of virtuous baby faces. Like, okay. That's basically what this is going to be for me. So there you go.
Fair enough. There's another type of baby face that's also really good. And that is the destructive, unstoppable monster babyface who vanquishes all the big bad bullies. And so my number 9 Number 9 is Goldberg.
Nice. That's a great one.
That's good.
So I didn't even think about Goldberg, and now I feel really bad that I didn't put him on my list. That's a great call.
Yeah, I don't think I would have had him if we did this list a year ago, but I was always a fan. I always loved Goldberg. Like, Goldberg squashes is one of my favorite things ever. Mm-hmm. And he just has this intensity, and everything's so great with him. But seeing him live in Toronto just squash Brock Lesnar in a minute was one of, like, the best wrestling experiences I've ever had. The whole crowd just chanting his name from his entrance until his exit, like, with no break. It was just such a great live experience, and that just pushed him over the edge to get on my list, for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, Goldberg's somebody that I thought about when I initially brought this idea up to you, and I was like, we should do our top 50. Goldberg was somebody that I would have had 30 or something like that. Just the run was a little short for me. Like, for the top 10, I wanted to have a little, like, I kind of took it as a little greatest wrestler ever kind of twist on it, where I tried to get like longevity and stuff in there too, and take that into consideration. So Goldberg was just a little short for me, but yeah, I mean, great pick.
That's a great pick. So I really enjoy that one.
Well, yeah. Tim, is your pick better?
No, because it's Bailey. It's Bailey at 9.
Oh, okay.
So here's thing. Like, so Bailey, like I said, virtuous babyface. She is, like, she's the best pure babyface there's been in 20 years at the very least.
You were talking about Bailey, not Mike Bailey, right?
Not Mike Bailey, no. I love me some Speedball, though. Come back to America, Speedball. We need you.
No, he's good.
I know. But yeah, I know. He's definitely good in Canada. But it's just like, it's hard not to like what Bailey's about. And of course, she's unfortunately been not what she was in NXT that she is on the main roster. And that's probably going to be a longer transition than I think a lot of people hoped. But oh God, like, I can't think of another person that was more wrapped up in professional wrestling, just as a story, than Bailey on her rise over the 2014-2015 years in NXT. Just like immensely, immensely popular, like, just an incredible, just virtuous babyface. And it was, I had to put her on here just because I was thinking about that, just your non-traditional, you know, Southern stereotype baby face. You know, she is of that archetype, but she does it in a completely different environment than a lot of those people did. And I'm really impressed by that, because to be a pure baby face like she is, or a pure heel like The Miz is, especially now, is very difficult to do. And so I think I give extra points to her on that, for sure.
Yeah, she was one of my last cuts for one of the Rickies, unfortunately. But, like, I really think if she went to SmackDown instead of Raw, she'd be on my list, because I watch SmackDown and I don't watch Raw, and it's so much better booked. But, like, it's kind of a little out of sight with her, because I really haven't seen her since she left NXT, so it's kind of that. But, yeah, she's the best babyface since my number 8 pick, which we'll talk about in a bit. But yeah, she's just really, really great at everything a babyface needs to do. And she's a traditional babyface, as there has been in years.
So I had to get her on my list. So there she is at 9. And I will point out that if people are yelling as to how I have her above Lawler, like I said, I want to get Lawler on, because when Lawler is a babyface, he is like the best fired up babyface ever. Problem is that he also had this really long heel run, and he's a really, 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 really good heel. Yeah. So, now these are basically all baby faces, in their entirety, a lot of the way. So
that's a good kind of transition to my number 9, actually. Because my number 9 became famous as a heel, and then as time went on, became a totally beloved baby face. And, you know, there's lots of different types of baby faces, as we'll talk about as we go on. I didn't go all virtuous all the way. I've definitely got some people who were heels, and, you know, some people who were you know, less virtuous, we'll say. And my number nine is kind of one of those guys, and that's Pero Aguayo.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very different baby face. That is ridiculous.
Very different baby face. You know, just as gritty and grimy as it gets. You know, I mentioned about Dusty, how important bleeding was for baby faces. And Pero really takes that to the next level. Pero and Dusty, I have them back to back. They're kind of similar guys. I just think Pero is just a better version, basically. You know, he has that unbelievable crowd connection. Just, he has that ability to make every little thing interesting. He kind of has that, Tenryu Hashimoto sort of charisma where everything just feels more important when he's around. I love Paraguay. I think he's one of the most underrated workers. I've been watching 2000, EMLL pay-per-views lately, and he had a match with Universo Dos Mil, a hair versus mask match in 2001. And I swear to God, it was incredible just based on the strength of Pero Aguayo being an unbelievable, beloved babyface. That dude is awesome. And he's another one that just, he had to make my list. Couldn't really go much higher because, again, he spent so much of his career as a heel. But once he was a babyface and like that old man, just ass kicker babyface, that's one of my favorite archetypes in wrestling. Yeah. And he was one of the best.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times, the first time people saw Pero, it was when Worlds Collide and that cage match, which I have to go back and rewatch because I bet
it's awesome.
I bet it's way more awesome than I remember.
It's so good. It's not the best match on the show. It's not as good as the tag match, but it is the second best match on the show. It's a 4-star match, I think. It's really, he's one of those guys, and I was kind of laughing about it when I watched that Universo Dos Mil match the other night, that like, he's a dude that I would have totally just in 2001 when I first got into Lucha. I never would have watched his matches because he was old. Like, even Stan Hansen was bad by the time he was 50. How could this guy be any good? You know, and looking back, rewatching those matches, they're so good. Like, yeah, Paraguay was great.
And his son's pretty damn good, too.
Son's pretty damn good, too. yeah, or was. Damn.
a great, great pick. I haven't seen enough. Otherwise, he would have made my list, I think. Tim, he's not on your list, I assume?
No, he is not, but that's a great one.
You discount the furry boots?
No, I like the furry boots. What are you talking about?
Points for the furry boots.
Yeah, points for the furry boots.
Yeah. Furry boots are great. My number eight does not have furry boots, unfortunately. I don't think it would have worked with furry boots. But this is someone who's not making Tim's list because he's probably more well-known as a heel. Which is sounds stupid for a babyface list, but there you go. I think this is someone who kind of started as a heel and spent a lot of time of his career as a heel, and he really found his way as a heel, and then he turned babyface, and he didn't spend his whole career as a babyface after that, but he had a long run, and during that period was one of the best babyface workers I've ever seen, just getting the crowd on his side. So he started feuding with Randy Orton, who at that point was the most boring wrestler in the world. No one ever wanted to see Randy Orton. And he wrestled him and made us care about Randy Orton, which is fucking bizarre. And then turned heel on Randy Orton. So what do I know? But I'm going with Christian, who I love as a babyface, and I think he's one of the best workers ever as a babyface.
Yeah, I will back you up on Christian as a babyface because he never really tried the babyface look on until he went to TNA as their big free agent get, you know?
And then he turned heel there.
And then he turned heel because, of course, he turned heel.
Yeah.
But yeah, him coming back is like the prodigal son returning and having the ECW run. Yeah, that's a great call. And I do think that him as a babyface. Like I said, the ECW title run with Christian as a babyface is one of the great babyface runs. Probably what lasts 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
Just pure babyface runs. That's a great call. But yeah, I think with him, for me, it was just too much back and forth.
But yeah, his baby first work is very, very good.
I gotta rep the Canadians.
Of course you do.
If this was a top 10 list of guys I desperately want, like a comprehensive career comp of, Christian would be on it.
Nice.
Like, I everybody talks about how he's like the week to one of the week to week guys to watch, like Buddy Rose. And I've seen a lot of it. I just didn't watch it week to week at the time. And I'd really love to just watch everything that he did.
Yeah, I think just like from his return on until his retirement, like that's one of the all time great runs that no one really talks about because nothing was really well booked or well canonized or anything during that time. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And I bet it's mostly on the network. So.
Yeah, and you bring up those Randy Orton matches. Those were awesome matches. So good. Unbelievable, considering it's freaking Randy Orton.
Yeah, and even, like, great matches with Ezekiel Jackson and just...
Jack Swagger,
when Jack Swagger was pretty green at the time, and Zack Ryder, and just all these guys that he just made look like very villainous guys, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you got, Tim?
I have Daniel Bryan at 8 because
awesome.
Supernova, like Supernova babyface, right? Like we're talking about, you know, so he's been a baby. It's so weird. So he's been a babyface for the majority of his career, right?
Yeah.
And people like I think everybody's thinking about the yes, yes, yes babyface, but like, how about him against Morishima in Ring of Honor? Where he had to fight, you know, he had to take on the mountain that was Takeshi Morishima and do the fight without honor as just this gritty underdog babyface that had to go to incredible length to go through, you know, what he did to beat him. I mean, like, those are two very visceral things in my mind when it comes to him. He's also one of the better comedy babyfaces of all time, too, and we can't forget that. But, yeah, I mean... You know, I wanted to get a couple of modern baby faces on here, and so I went with Bailey and I went with Daniel. But I just feel that he is always going to be thought about as such a great technical worker. But the thing that really made him unique and incredible was the fact that when he was a baby face, there were very few that could touch him. I know ROH ran a lot of just straight up non-babyface, non-heel stuff with him just because they wanted to see him work with everybody, right? I mean, he worked, you know, basically anyone that everybody thought was good is like, okay, have him work Brian, see what happens. But, like, when he was a babyface, he was a phenomenal babyface. And I think that if ROH had decided, although his heel run as champ is good, if they had decided to make Brian just an outright babyface, not just because of the way he worked, but just from a character standpoint, who knows what would have happened. I felt like his career could have blossomed even sooner, from a complete standpoint.
Yeah. I don't know how I forgot about Daniel Bryan. So what we're going to do is just when I get to my number 6, I'll talk about who I had at number 6, but really swap him out for Daniel Bryan.
All right, then.
Someone who made me care about a wrestling match again, which, you know, after Benoit's death and Eddie's death and all these deaths, it was hard to get, like, emotionally invested in the winner or loser of a match. But Daniel Bryan, during his final babyface run there, maybe want him to win the title, which hasn't happened, really, besides Bayley since. So, yeah, he deserves to be on the list, and he'll be my co-number 6 spot when I get to it.
Yeah, he was one of my last cuts. One of my last cuts. I think he's that babyface run in WWE is just one of the all-time great runs. He's maybe the best hot tag in wrestling history as a babyface. Just incredible in that run. Great matches with everybody. Yeah, great pick.
Yep. So who's your 8, Elliot?
All right, my number 8 is maybe my most controversial pick. I said before the show that I didn't have any Rickies on my list, but I do have a Riki, and that's Riki Choshu. Yeah, so like as Tim keeps saying, he's a big fan of virtuous babyfaces, and I've got some virtuous babyfaces for sure higher on my list. but there are other types, and you know, Choshu is like the renegade Stone Cold Steve Austin sort of babyface, where he's a bad guy, where he's sort of, you know, he's anti-establishment, but in a way that you can't help but get behind. You know, Japanese wrestling was most interesting when Choshu was in whatever promotion. When he was in New Japan was better. When he was in All Japan was more enjoyable. You know, he was great as the veteran. I mean, the 1996 G1 Climax, his storyline there where he's retiring and this is going to be his last G1 Climax, and he has that unbelievable match against Hashimoto the first night and then goes all the way to the finals, beats all the young guys. He's another guy that has that sort of, you know, crazy connection with the crowd that makes everything he does feel bigger. One of the great tag workers ever, and tag team wrestling and baby faces are kind of synonymous in my mind. Maybe that's because of like the Rock and Roll Express and things like that. But, you know, Choshu was awesome as like the amped up, kind of Southern style tag worker in the All Japan matches and against Jumbo and Tenryu. Yeah, he's a guy that I kind of wanted on the list because of what he represented. And that's that sort of anti-establishment, I'm gonna go my own way, fuck everybody else, and then, you know, has no problem standing up to the boss and taking it to him to the delight of everybody.
Yeah, I think of Choshu as a heel. I don't know why.
I totally, and that's why I thought of he's like my controversial one, where he definitely is a heel in a lot of ways, but to a portion of the audience, he's a babyface. And, you know, when he went to All Japan, they kind of turned Jumbo and Tenryu to the point where Choshu was the underdog babyface in those classic matches in 1986. So definitely like a weirder one, but I wanted him as sort of my Stone Cold representative, where babyfaces don't always have to be the nice guy.
Yeah, and you know, the pop whenever Power Hall comes on is still one of the great things, like in Japanese wrestling. It's one of those, just he has an aura about him that it's just completely unique. And you're right. It is a baby face that for me, you know, it is kind of more in the Stone Cold, you know, bucking authority type, but he is so good at the role. Like him and Austin are kind of the two guys you think of in that role. And there have been people who have tried to have that role and can't do it. Like they don't have the stuff to do it. So
exactly.
He's someone that I didn't think about for this list. But he was someone that now makes me think a little bit more outside the box when it comes to face and heels, because I know he was popular, but I wasn't sure if that made him a good baby face or
right.
If that was just, you know, like Hogan, who was like, I didn't change becoming a face because I worked as a face. I worked heel and got cheered as a face. You know,
right.
That's kind of that whole delineation is one of the things I considered.
Yeah.
And so Choshu's kind of hard to put in that in respect.
He made my list in part because I figured, you know, he wouldn't be on y'all's radar, whereas Stone Cold might be, or The Rock might be. And those are all kind of guys where they start off as the anti-authority kind of bad guy. And then the crowd turns them because they're so wildly charismatic and cool. Let's just be straight up. Choshu's cool as fuck. Like, would you rather be root for Riki Choshu or Fujinami? I mean, Choshu's the man.
yep.
You know, and so I wanted that. And then also just Japanese wrestling is difficult because there's not like it's a lot more gray because it's so athletic sports based in a lot of ways. And so I wanted to figure out how to get another Japanese guy on there, because I do have one more. And also he kind of, like I said, fulfilled that Austin role where like the crowd turned him organically for themselves, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good pick, and I didn't think of him, so your list is better than mine. but let's move on to my number 7, which for some reason, in the column beside it, I wrote Carlos Colon, who I guess is my honorable mention. So I don't know why he's written there, but he's a good pick. But
very good pick.
Just didn't make my list. But my number seven is the 1-2-3 Kid. Who?
Oh wow!
Very good one.
I would say the best wrestler ever at timing hope spots. I have never seen anyone better at it than the 1-2-3 Kid, and that's something that I think is one of the most important things a babyface can do. Because so many times you see a babyface getting beaten down, and then they'll do their hope spot, but their hope spot kind of ruins everything because it's like too powerful. But 1-2-3 Kid would just like hit a kick, but he would never gain the advantage, and the heel would be back on top, and it would just be perfect. Plus, you know, he was kind of tiny, and his selling was amazing, and he had the cool kicks and some flips and stuff like that, which helps getting the crowd on his side. But yeah, it's really that hope spot skill that he has that sets him apart, I think, than anyone else, because he's so good at it. It's really unbelievable. He even had that going when he was X-Pac later on. He still had that ability, and I don't see anyone talk about it, but it's if you watch, it's really there. It's unbelievable. Tim, do you have the Xbox six-pack, 1-2-3 Kid, Sean Waltman?
No, I don't. And that's tough because I think he has one of the great babyface moments of all time, right? With the upset of Razor Ramon. And he was. I think as the Kid, as the Lightning Kid, however you want to call him, 1-2-3 Kid, he was. He was your very typical virtuous baby face. And I think what happened with me with him was, I hate to say it, but him turning heel, it didn't make me think too much about his face time. And that's oversight on my part, I think, more than anything else. But I will definitely give credence to his face time. It's really, really good stuff. So
I think it's good that you specifically said 1-2-3 Kid instead of just Sean Waltman, because I was going to point out that, you know, he's another guy I thought about, and then I was like, well, the crowd completely turned on him to the point where X-Pac heat became like a regular talking point for everybody. And then also as Lightning Kid on the indies, he was a heel in a lot of those matches against Jerry Lynn. But 1-2-3 Kid, undeniably one of the best babyface runs. He's somebody that I thought about and considered, but ended up not quite making it.
How big was your first list, Elliot?
I looked at the GWE nominees, and I just pulled everybody that I thought could, like, that I would consider a great babyface. And then I kind of pared it down from there. So it was probably like 50 people, and then quickly names started dropping off when I thought about things like, you know, were they primarily known as a face or primarily known as a heel? It was a quick process to knock it down to like 15 names for the final.
How long did Octagon stay on the list?
Octagon was not on the list, period.
Tim, who's your number seven? Is it Octagon?
No, it is not. Mine is Tito Santana.
Oh my god, fuck. Okay.
Yeah. Even your list is terrible.
My number six is now a three-way tie.
Okay. Your list is terrible. Look, Tito Santana, career babyface. Definitely one of my favorite things in wrestling ever are Tito Santana comebacks. Yeah. Very much one of the great comebacks, especially numerous, right? The Savage matches, the Valentine matches, I mean, just go on and on, but he was very good at garnering sympathy and then going for it at the end. Really just the best stuff. And I think that, he is, you know, him deciding to kind of end his career, I think a little bit earlier than a lot of people thought. Like, I mean, if you really think about it, people are like, oh, yeah, he could have gone for years longer if he wanted to. But he was. I mean, the time frame he had in the 80s and into the early 90s, one of the great baby faces ever. And as far as virtuous baby faces go, this is going to start a pretty
Hello?
Hello?
Tim.
Did we lose Tim?
We just lost Tim, so.
Oh, no.
That's all right. Okay, recall. Why don't you go to your number seven while I'm getting Tim back here?
My number seven is a virtuous babyface, and it's not Octagon, but it is a luchador, and I have a feeling that you might have him a little bit higher, and that is Atlantis.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of thought that you might. Do you want to wait for him?
Let's go to a break.
Okay.
While we figure out why Tim left us.
I wonder if he's still talking about Tito.
He might be. we'll come back from our break, and Tim will still be talking about Tito. So we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit clotheslines and headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, and we're back. And Tim, we've stopped him talking about Tito. So I think we're ready to move on. But before we do, Elliot, do you have anything you would like to plug?
I actually would. Stacy and I recorded our second episode of Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Adventure for Place to Be Nation, where we talked about Trish Stratus versus Mickie James from WrestleMania 22, and we also talked about Gilbert Cheska and Billy Catanzaro, which I mispronounce every single time. The 1960s French catch match that's amazing and everybody needs to see. We recorded that, and that should be going up on Place to Be very soon. Look out for it. We had a lot of fun.
Awesome. I really enjoyed the one episode you did, so I'm looking forward to this. Sadly, the episode you did on the Hell in a Cell match
didn't seem to help it.
Didn't help it for the Voices of Wrestling poll, where I was the highest voter and only one other person voted for it, which was kind of sad.
But, very sad.
Yeah, what can you do? I think the Falls Count Anywhere and the WrestleMania triple threat kind of
it probably split some votes. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Tim, do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, so Phoenix Pro Wrestling, obviously go to YouTube and just search PPW Petaluma. They're also on Instagram and Twitter at PPW Petaluma, and you can also search for them on Facebook. Me and Eric do the comment. Me and Eric Ritz from Segunda Caída do the commentary for it, and they're over there. We just did a show this past week to crown our first ever tag team champions, which are JJ King and Rick Luxury, a couple of longtime Bay Area standbys. So I am basically now in the stages of starting up my new podcast venture that I'm excited for. I don't know how many other people are excited for, but I'm excited for it. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to revisit Ring of Honor from the beginning. And I am going to start on my aim day is for February 20th, which back in 2002 was the first show for Ring of Honor. And so I hope to have a show up for that day. And then I'm going to do them as regularly as possible. They're going to just be like little, 30-minute to hour recaps of the shows. And I'm going to try and have guests on when I can to talk about the shows and what they mean in the grand scheme of things, especially now considering that Ring of Honor's legacy, having been around for 15 years, has very much been up and down. And I wanted to kind of go back and look and just see how much influence you see out of these guys that I think a lot of people who were in the Northeast from the beginning with ROH still pimp today. So I'm starting that in the next couple of weeks, and I look forward to it.
Yeah, I look forward to it too. I plugged the hell out of it when I was on Sam's We Don't Know Wrestling podcast.
Yes, which I saw, and Sam was wondering why the hell you were plugging a non-existent podcast.
You know, you do what you do.
That sounds awesome.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds really good.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it as well. For things to plug, my Twitter, Stephen Graham TWS. My blog, I've semi-regularly been writing this year, and I plan to do every month the top lucha matches of the month. So I've got it all planned out for January, just waiting for the month to end for anything that gets added on to it there. So check that out. And I might have a new podcast coming up, maybe. We'll see. But I'll talk about that if that happens, which it should, but I don't want to say anything if it doesn't. So let's go back to our list. We're talking top 10 baby faces. And
now, before you cut me off on Tito, you guys went through your sixes, right? I didn't get a chance
We just finished seven.
Yeah, okay. We just finished seven.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, that's right, because you guys think there's going to be a lot of overlap, and I think there's going to be a lot of overlap, too. Yeah. So, all right, let's go with
Elliot's it. Number seven is higher up on my list, but we're not going to tell you who that is.
Great.
Mystery alive.
All right, I like it. So, Steven, you're six.
My six is a three-way tie.
That's right. Because there were two that I said that he wants on his list now.
Yeah, so it's a three-way tie between Daniel Bryan, Tito Santana, and Ricky Steamboat, who I don't think I – do I need to say anything about Ricky Steamboat? You know, he's a great babyface. Everyone knows about him. On my list.
That's why I didn't make my list, is because it's like, it's Ricky Steamboat. What else can you say in 2017?
I will be talking about Ricky Steamboat later in this episode.
Okay, maybe I'll say something when you get to it.
Okay,
but
cool.
Yeah, he's tied for number six on mine.
Okay. My number six is Kerry Von Erich, because in Texas, Kerry Von Erich was, I mean, just go back and watch Von Erich from 82 to 85. So David was the best worker, but Kerry is by far the best babyface. I mean, we're talking about a guy who had charisma for days, just in so over, incredibly athletic. I mean, he was a prototypical babyface, and unfortunately, we all know of the tragedies, the pratfalls, all the things that befell him. But man, I will say this, watching everything from the Freebird stuff to him challenging Flair after David's death. I mean, all that time frame, it's one of the great babyface runs of all time, to be perfectly blunt with you. And I felt really bad not having him on this list. And I was like, you know, I have to put him somewhere. And so I put him at 6. So Kerry Von Erich on the list.
Yeah. Man, talk about someone who is loved in his home area.
Yeah.
Just incredible.
Yeah. There's an argument to be made that in his territory, I don't think there was anybody that was more over as a babyface than Kerry Von Erich. And I'm pretty and there's maybe one or two offhand, but like for a long stretch of time, I don't think there's anybody who was more over than Kerry Von Erich was as a babyface. So, I mean, as to the extent he was, I mean, he was a freaking supernova. It was insane.
Yeah.
Kerry was my very last cut. Like, he's my absolute last cut. Somebody that I really wanted to put on the list. I actually disagree. I think he was better than David. I think he was by far the best Von Erich worker. By far. Yeah, I think he was a legitimately great wrestler. I think once you get beyond Steamboat and Flair, he's not the best. Steamboat and Funk. He's not the best Flair opponent, but he's my favorite Flair opponent.
He was so Luger. If you compare the Luger matches with Kerry, you see a lot of similarities there sense that, you know, Kerry was somewhat of a quote unquote limited worker, but what really Rick did was like, hey, what are your best things? And he's like, I got good punches. I can press you. I can use my athleticism and throw a good drop kick. And Flair was like, okay, then we're going to use those with Luger. It was power slam, press slam, shoulder tackle. Like, that's how that worked. Like, he understood that. And I think that's a great point, is like, Kerry as a Flair opponent as one of his best, for sure.
Yeah. And I think Kerry was a really underrated seller. Like, you look at something like that match against Jumbo Tsuruta from All Japan. Right. Unbelievable performance selling. Great in long matches, great in short little violent sprints. You talk about the connection with the crowd. I put him in as somebody in that sort of Choshu, Paraguayo, Tenryu, sort of just unbelievable charisma where everything feels more important when he's around. I really think, and this may just be in my mind, but like, once you get past, like, you know, there's certain archetypes of babyface. There's the Ricky Morton, Ricky Steamboat kind of like perpetual underdog. And then there's also the jock, like, star quarterback sort of babyface who is going to stand up for you when you're getting picked on by a bully or something like that. And I see Kerry as like the ultimate sort of John Cena sort of babyface, where he can fight back against the odds. He can make a comeback against two guys. He'll stand up for the little guy. Like, I'm really happy you put Kerry on your list. He's somebody I thought a lot about. Hugely underrated wrestler.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Great pick.
Hmm. So I guess it's time to move on to number 5 then. Sorry. I'm a horrible host.
No, you're good. And my 6 was actually one of your honorable mentions, Carlos Colon.
There you go.
Yeah. Just he's somebody that had to make it. I mean, we talk a lot about connection with the crowd. He's certainly got that, you know, alongside any other babyface in history. Great ace, great worker. I mean, there's the Hansen feud, the matches against Abdullah. He's maybe the best gimmick match worker in history. We haven't really talked much about drawing for this, but holy shit. I mean, he had, worked in front of some of the biggest crowds you've ever seen. They were unbelievably hot. Like, the matches against Steve Strong are ridiculously good and ridiculously hot in terms of crowd heat. Yeah, I mean, he's like your Lawler sort of just typical ace that just he had to make it for me.
Yeah, I think he would make my list after I'm done watching the Puerto Rico set. But
and I just finished it, so it's fresh for me. And so there was no way I could leave him off.
Tim?
No, I mean, Cologne I've only seen in spurts. Puerto Rico's been a blind spot for me, and so I didn't feel comfortable putting him on my list. But I mean, obviously, what I have seen, the Abby matches, I mean, like, just there's some things there that are just
top flight stuff. And I think if I'd seen more, he'd be an easy pick for the list, probably, just on what I've heard from people. But unfortunately, I haven't seen enough of him to put on my list. So he had to stay off, sadly.
I think he's incredibly similar to Tito Santana, but with like a cartwheel or like his little jump thing that he does, which is
the jumping headbutt thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's very similar. And, you know, Tito was tied for number six on my list. So he's pretty
right.
So let's move on to number five, which is very similar to my number 10 pick. Just everything that my number 10 pick did, this person did better. And that's Rey Mysterio Jr., who's still going strong today, by the way. Just one of the best at the flashy but great charisma, great selling baby faces. He's got, let's be honest, he's got probably the best offense of anyone in wrestling history. Combining that with some of the best selling and some of the best match structure, really. And his only heel run was under Russo, so it doesn't count. So I would say Rey Jr. Should be a lock for anyone's top of the list.
Yeah, I have him. I have later on my list, I have Rey, so we'll talk. I'll talk about him when I get there.
Okay. I've got him higher as well.
See, there you go.
Perfect. There you go. So my number five, I'm pretty sure Steven has higher on his list than I do, but my number five is Dustin Rhodes. And
oh, he was my last cut.
Yeah, actually. I mean, look, he might be the best tag team face in peril outside of everyone. I think some, you know, has something to say about him as a baby face, but him in WCW as a baby face is one of my favorite things. And as a kid, is someone that I looked up to immensely. I just thought he was so good. He was great, fired up. I love the bulldog that he would hit just off the ropes wherever, you know, out of nowhere. I love how he stood up to anybody. And this is somebody, like, when I grew up, I knew of Dusty Rhodes. I didn't know really what he was all about, but I saw Dustin doing what he was like, and I was like, oh man, this guy is so great. But in tag matches with Wyndham, the tag team with Steamboat, it was part of one of my favorite matches of all time in the Enforcers tag from Clash. I mean, it's like, it's really hard for me not to put him on this list just because I feel like his babyface work, while it was only about 4 years worth of really top flight babyface stuff, is literally some of the best babyface work that was ever done. And he did this at the very young age of 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, and was superb at it. So I had to put him on the list. And I thought so much of him that I put him this high. So I have him at five.
Yeah, he was originally on my list, but I think he just got cut at the end there. And you mentioned him being one of the best face in perils. He's also one of the best hot tags of all time, too.
That's so funny, yeah, that you mentioned that, because he is such a great hot tag. But it was really tough, I think, Wyndham being Wyndham. I think they worked the Wyndham being the veteran, and so you had to work Dustin as the guy who would get beat down. But after Wyndham got hurt, right? They play that up a little bit, and I think, yeah, you're right. He is a very good hot tag. So
yeah, and also he had that great run at the start, but 2013-14, that was one of the great babyface runs as well as Gold does.
If you weren't wanting me to pick like two tag matches out of the blue, it would be that Clash match, and then it would be the Battleground tag with the Shield, is just like, you want to talk about the best pure babyface moment you could possibly ask for. He was such, and it was so funny. He was a minor part of the story. It was about Cody's redemption, but he added so much to it that just subtleties and the way he worked and the way he was kind of defined in certain world is like, yeah, he's just so freaking good. And, and the Booker T run, right?
Yeah.
Like, the book dust. It was, just so good. Such a great, great baby face.
Yeah, one of my favorite live experiences is the night he returned and he faced Randy Orton, just like to defend his brother who was fired, and they had this great match on Raw, and it was just like, I think he was fighting for Cody's job or something. It was just a great performance. And you know, he had those shitty runs in TNA, and you didn't think he could come back and be so good, but man, was he good. But yeah, great, great pick. But who do you have at number five, Elliot?
Number five, I have Giant Baba.
Ooh, that's such a good one.
Yeah.
I had a tough time placing him if I wanted to or not, but okay, I'll listen. What do you got?
Yeah. So it's actually good to talk about him right after Dustin, because one thing that was always really impressive about Dustin was how great of a seller he was for how big he was and able to garner sympathy for being such a big dude. And Giant Baba was bigger than his opponent in every single match of his career, and yet he was still able to become like a beloved babyface. It was never weird for him to be getting his ass kicked and, you know, be selling and gaining sympathy. It even kind of, his awkwardness kind of even helped as he got older, because that actually sort of played into his sympathy. Like, even though he was so big, he was so immobile and kind of goofy that he could garner sympathy that way. Great wrestler, just in terms of connection with the crowd, you know, there's few guys in wrestling history that are cultural icons in a way that transcends wrestling. And it's like El Santo, Riki Dozen, Inoki, Baba, and Hogan. And Baba was the only one that could really make my list, because he's the only one that I've seen a lot of. You know, I don't have El Santo matches, and Hogan's a racist, so he wasn't going to make it.
Jesus charity. Yeah.
You know, so
I wanted
yeah.
to get one of those guys on. But I think in terms of, like, degree of difficulty, which isn't something that we've really talked about, like, it's kind of easy to garner sympathy when you're smaller than everybody, but to become like this beloved icon when you're bigger than everybody else, like, that's pretty impressive to me.
Yeah.
He did it for so long. No, that's just what I was going to say. He did it for so long too.
And what I was going to say about Baba, because he's an oversight. He is a 100% oversight for me, is that I thought he was, so he was at a time in Japanese wrestling when the face heel stuff really still was a big deal.
Right.
And, you know, but what was interesting was, like, his Destroyer matches, the Destroyer was so charming that it was almost like a face versus face match in a lot of ways.
Well, not the 69 one.
Not the 69 one, but, and, like, the 74 match, and, yeah.
Well, the 72 match that they had, the storyline behind that match was basically that they would wrestle, and if Baba won, then Destroyer would team up with him and join All Japan full time and work all the tours.
Right.
And that was a really big moment in terms of solidifying All Japan, because they were a new promotion and Destroyer was a huge star. So by that point, by 72, Destroyer was essentially a babyface.
Right.
And they were teammates. So that's why that kind of happened.
Right. So yeah. What I thought was interesting, especially in the early times of Baba, was that he basically did just book himself as, you know, the defending AJPW turf babyface. And it was kind of your usual Riki Dozen, like you're talking about, trope, but I never once thought about him kind of being this defender of Japan, because I always thought of that as such kind of like a benign time, like the face heel structure. But then you think about, like, the guys they brought in, the original Sheik, the Tiger Jeet Singh's, like, all these, like, kind of the Germans, like, they totally went that route with
Abby.
With Abby, yeah.
Eventually,
you know?
Hansen, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a great call, and now I feel bad that I didn't put Baba on there, because I love Baba, and Steven loves Baba even more than I do.
And I love Baba, and most of my viewing of Baba is old man Baba.
Yes.
Because it's just, he has this infectious joy when he's wrestling. Like, he's smiling. Like even these later tags, like the tag league, he teams with Andre, or he teams with Hansen. He's having the time of his life. He's not doing much of anything, but he's just smiling and happy in there just to, like, give a chop or something. It's so good. I love watching Baba.
And you look at those All Japan undercards when Baba was, you know, working those six-man comedy matches in the mid and late 90s, the undercards were terrible. You know, it was, you were waiting for the main event and the semi-main event, and you were going to get a good match, but the undercard was just full of just really uninteresting guys. So the Baba comedy match was actually, like, kind of a high point on the undercard of a lot of those shows for the fans, especially the more rural fans, when they would when they would travel and tour, they were always really excited to come out and see Baba and get into the whole comedy routine. So even when he was a joke, he was a great babyface. And he's one of those guys like Rey Mysterio Jr. where in his context, I can't imagine Baba ever being a heel, even though he's this enormous giant man.
He's the gentle giant for sure.
He's like the friendly giant.
Imagine how great he probably was in like Los Angeles as a heel in the 60s. Like I would kill for some of those matches. Cause he was a big name, heel in the United States. He got over major in a way that a lot of the other Japanese wrestlers never did.
Yeah. Good call. Very nice. Here's the thing. I know that we all have very different lists and I do like that all of us really are bringing something different to the table here. I mean, we're not even to our top fours yet. We're going to have some similarities going forward, but like we're really doing well, I think, with highlighting a lot of different types of baby faces here.
Yeah.
So we're all over the board. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Just wanted to point that out. So.
Well, let's move on to my number four and let's see if that, it doesn't continue the trend because you already mentioned this person and that's Jerry Lawler.
Right.
He's my number four.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Let's confab on Lawler here. Go ahead.
So, as you said earlier, Lawler, you know, he was a great heel, but he was a better babyface. Like, you talk about connection with the crowd that Kerry or any of these other people had. Lawler had that. Look at those, the matches with Dundee where he has one eye taped over and, like, he's just fighting for his life and he's bleeding and the crowd is just almost crying that he's getting beat up and talk about psychology and timing his comebacks and just everything that Lawler did as a babyface was absolutely perfect and maybe the best babyface worker of all time if we're just going by that. But yeah, Jerry Lawler. Tim, you talked about him. Elliot.
Yeah, I mean, it's Jerry Lawler. I mean, what can you say? Like, he defined Memphis wrestling. One of those guys that started as a heel and was major as a heel and then became even bigger as a babyface. In addition to the work, obviously, you know, we all know that he's a great worker, but we all also know that he's an amazing, all-time great promo. And that played into getting him so high on my list is that he's, you know, in addition to being an all-time great worker, he's one of the best babyface promos ever. You know, singles, tag matches, if you want to talk angles, you want to talk interviews, like, it's freaking Jerry Lawler. Like, he, this was as low as I could possibly get him, and he's, you know, you can't fault anybody for putting him number one at all.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, even his stuff with The Miz later on.
Stuff with The Miz, the Andy Kaufman feud is, like, the fucking greatest thing ever.
The Terry Funk feud.
Terry Funk feud.
Oh, man.
Dutch Mantel, I mean, just, yeah, Lawler's the man, and it hurts me to put him as low as four, but the three guys I got ahead of him, I feel okay about it.
Yeah. Who do you have at number four, Tim? Which we've, I guess, determined is technically incorrect, because me and Elliot both have Lawler.
Oh, good, thanks, yeah, I appreciate it. I'm being left out here. Oh, so you're Steven's going to have this guy higher, so he'll talk about him, and you might have him higher too, Elliot, but I got Rick Martel here at four.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Look, yeah, you have him higher. But, like, he's, yeah, like, one of the great discoveries of going back to the 80s, especially in the AWA set, was watching Rick Martel as a babyface and wondering why in the world anybody would turn him heel. Like, just, like, absolutely. And then I watched some Portland stuff with him in it. I was just like, how is he a heel?
Seriously, like, it's 80s, crazy. 80s,
like, I don't get that. And it's, he's one of the best baby faces. I think as far as fired up baby faces go, he might be the all time best. He is, I mean, it's between him and Lawler for me. And I picked Martel this high just because his longevity as a baby face is just phenomenal. But like, man, when he put the Dukes up and just started doing that dance. Oh man, dude, I was all in. I'm not going to go gushing over him like Parv would, but I mean, he is very, very good, and I'm very much a fan of Rick Martel as a babyface.
Oh, yeah. I'll talk about him soon.
Yeah, he didn't make my list because I knew Steven was gonna.
Yeah.
I knew he'd make it on the show.
Yeah.
So that was number four, right? So we're moving on to number three.
Hmm.
Okay. So keeping the Canadian bandwagon going here, this is where I'm putting Bret Hart because no one defines the kind of like. Bret Hart is kind of like a hockey player. He's like the Sidney Crosby. He's workmanship. He's excellent at what he does and he knows it, but he's not like out there being super cocky about it. He's just out there perfecting his craft, and the selling he could do in the ring and, you know, obviously the way he would structure a match to get sympathy was just insane, but, just ridiculous. And, talk about his run as the Canadian hero and like the reaction he gets at the Canadian Stampede is probably the best reaction in the history of wrestling. And that, you know, I was a teenager watching that and that defined what a babyface was to me. And so that's why he gets into number three there.
Yeah, I thought about Bret Hart too. But I knew you would have him on the list. I actually am super shocked he's not number one. But yeah, I mean, he is a very good babyface. He was kind of the first, kind of stoic babyface that I remember of growing up. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was just so calculating in the ring and, he talked, but he was very, he was kind of almost, he was very soft, but he let his actions talk for him. And I did admire that as a kid. I just think as years have gone by, I liked other things as a baby face. But definitely growing up, he was one of my favorites.
What other thing you forgot to mention is that he's one of the few smart baby faces.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He did not fall for all the Sting baby face tropes. We need to put that out there. Yeah. And I'm also very happy that none of us have Sting on our list. Because no. He is not a good baby face.
No.
He's just not. When Luger can turn on you as many times as he has, you don't put Sting on a list like this. You just can't.
Absolutely. We should always mention the Luger walking behind Sting, being mean to the crowd. While yeah. Sting, and then when Sting turns around, he would clap hands with the fans.
Yeah, like, let's go, yeah!
Some of the best character work in the history of wrestling. It's one of the most unique and like just perfect angles.
Yeah. Just great stuff. I assume you don't have Bret on your list, AL.
Bret did not make my list. Mostly because I thought for me, the best run of his career was he was a heel, but for you, he was a babyface. You know, yeah. the 1997 or that kind of disqualifies him.
That was the best
for me.
Babyface run in the history of wrestling, but most people yeah. call it a heel run. So.
This is one of the best heel runs in the history of wrestling.
That's great, though. Like, no one else has that where their best run is either a heel or babyface, depending on where you were born.
Exactly. It's wholly unique and really awesome, but it's why he couldn't make my list.
Fair enough. Tim, so who do you have at number three?
This is where I have Rey Mysterio.
Oh.
I mean, best babyface flyer of all time. You want to talk about a guy who has timing, perhaps the best at taking cutoff spots ever? Like, I mean, this is a guy who knew exactly how to work a heel's offense into his match, really how to time comebacks, how to really just put the brakes on something, really get, you know, he can stop and start. Like, the Eddie matches are masterful because Eddie, a tremendous heel, Ray, a tremendous face. They knew exactly when to stop, when to start, when to stop. And it's just, that's always been a great template for me. And then his TV matches, he's the best face TV worker I think I've ever seen. And he can do it in trios, tags, singles. Just it's really hard for me to not gush about him considering we want to get to other people on the show. But I can't get over just for so long. And even now, even today, like, he has the Loki match. He has, you know, the stuff on Lucha Underground. Like, he is still continuing to be a very, very good wrestler. And it's really for almost 30 years. That's unprecedented.
Especially for the style he has.
Yes. To be able to do it. Without a doubt. He has reinvented himself in so many ways. It's kind of hard to keep track.
And I have Ray a little bit higher, so I'll wait a little bit to talk about him, but I won't have much to say because there's not much to say.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's Ray.
It's Ray. So
yeah.
So who do you have three, Elliot?
So my number three, you know, it's interesting. We talked a little bit about Bret Hart being the one guy who was a heel for certain people and a babyface for certain people at the same time. Well, my number three is the only guy who has to be on my top babyfaces list and would have to be on my top heels list, and that is Terry Funk.
Yeah, and so I on a point, I'll let you talk about it, but then I'm going to make a point about Funk, and I'm going to feel really bad about it, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I tried, like I said earlier, to kind of focus on guys who had their most memorable run as a babyface. It's tough for wrestlers because so many people turned. And you could definitely argue that Funk's best run or his most memorable run was as a heel. But when you think about his babyface run, specifically in All Japan, and you think if you think about it in terms of degree of difficulty, like, he was a beloved hero with cheerleaders in the crowd as a Texas American in a country whose wrestling history was built on the natives going up against often Texas foreigners, you know, often Americans, often Texans. So it's really amazing that he was able to transcend nationalities, to say nothing of the fact that as an in-ring worker, he's, you know, the best of all time. He was my number one for greatest wrestler ever. And a lot of that was predicated on this All Japan run. Obviously, he had great stuff as a heel. But, you know, I think of the Hanson feud. He was the one guy, like, you know, Ray Jr. Is able to convey sympathy, but he's never really able to come off as a badass, and a lot of that has to do with his size. But Terry Funk can go between, you know, being a sympathetic babyface and just being a complete scary badass when he's making his comeback, to where you think he's going to kill the heel. Ray Jr., he's just going to beat him, but Terry Funk, he's going to get fucking revenge. You know, just the fact that he was able to do what he was able to do where he did it, I find really, really impressive. So I just thought about, just in terms of artistic brilliance, it's there. But in terms of degree of difficulty, I think what he was able to do really was amazing on a transcendent level. And the only thing that kept him from being number one outright is that he was also maybe the best heel ever. you know, and the two guys above him don't have that.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Tim, before I make my play.
Well, look, so Terry Funk as a heel is kind of like burned into my brain.
I get that.
Because I wanted to tell the story just because it was the first thing I thought of when he said Terry Funk babyface. And it was because back when I first found out that TBS ran, wrestling, the first thing I ever watched outside of the horrible Black Scorpion angle was this recap of what they called the Feud of 89. And they played the highlights of the Flair Funk feud. And it was Funk from pile driver on Flair at Wrestle War to the Thunderdome cage match to the I Quit match. And for 6 months, that's all you saw with Funk. And like, that was burned into my head. Now, of course, I would see, you know, All Japan face Terry Funk, and Young Teacher with student Jumbo Tsuruta kind of face Terry Funk. And then, of course, FMW Crazy Man Terry Funk and ECW Crazy Man Terry Funk. But, like, I think what happened with Funk with me is I think everything just kind of got melded. And the only thing I thought of was, like, he was so unique that it was really hard for me to put him on a list like this, because I would feel if I put Terry Funk on a top 10 list, I would either rate him way too high or way too low. And then if I tried to put anybody else in one position or the other, I'd be like, well, Terry Funk's a better babyface than him, but he was as long as him. And it's like, there were too many variables for me
to put Funk on the list. That being said, there are just a couple of things with Funk that, as you mentioned, just stand out so much that it is hard for me to say that nobody should put him on the top babyface list, because he is so good as a babyface in the right elements. And he's done it so many different ways, too, which really is a testament to just Terry Funk as a professional wrestler in the first place.
Yeah, besides the great All Japan stuff, you have old man Terry Funk, who's fighting for his life, and wobbly, no legs Terry. Like, you have so many versions of babyface Terry Funk. But yeah, what hurts him for me is that, yes, he might be the best babyface run, but, like, I think of him as a heel, so it's hard.
Yeah.
For sure. But I could see someone having him number one easily.
And I totally understand that hesitation. Like, when I think of Terry Funk, I'll either think, like, oh, yeah, one of the greatest heels ever, or one of the great, but then I'll also think, but wait, one of the best baby faces ever. He's just, like, he had to get listed for me. He's my best of all time. It's Terry Funk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is hard. We're in the top two now. So this is getting difficult. But I'll go with my number two, someone who's been mentioned numerous times, and someone that if I did this list a couple years ago, probably be my number one, and that's Ricky Martel from Quebec City, Quebec, Canada, La Belle Province. one of the that means the beautiful province for anyone.
Yes, I've heard that.
As Tim mentioned, just the best babyface fire, the best fiery comebacks, the best selling. He could have, but it wasn't just like Tito had these great babyface comebacks and stuff, right? But like those were usually in like 12-minute sprint brawls. Well, Ricky Martel would have these 20, 30, 40-minute classics where he'd be selling the entire match and make his comebacks. He had the All Japan stuff, which was super great too. And then people forget that Strikeforce was one of the better babyface working teams at the time too, before the WWF tried to turn him heel. But as a babyface team, he was freaking great with that. And even with Tom Zenk as his partner, he did a hell of a job as a babyface carrying that team. And I just think the world of Rick Martel, and that's why he's number two.
Yeah, I actually was really toying with putting him above Ray, but Ray is for 20 plus years as a baby face is hard for me to say no to. And then I picked one and two for me as the best tag and the best singles baby faces I've ever seen. So, I had a tough time putting Martel at four. I think that all things being equal, like you said, the fire he had is just, you know, it's unmatched in a lot of ways, but, boy, he was just, he was so fun to watch, and I still can't freaking believe that they made him a heel when he came to WWF.
Well, what's really weird about that is, like, as a character, he was amazing as a heel. He just didn't have it in him to work a match as a heel, like to have a great match. But because, like, when he stopped being a heel in like WCW, he was great then too. It's just something about working heel just didn't work with him in the ring. But man, that character work was great with the arrogance and the big button that was like, "Yes, I'm a model." It was just amazing stuff there. But Elliot, where's Martel on your list?
Martel is one of those. I know Steven's gonna have him, so we'll talk about him whenever we get to him. Yeah. I was voting strategically. Martel is awesome. Like, it's amazing to me that somebody that was so blatantly amazing, it took so long for us to all figure it out. It's incredible that this, like, it's within the last 5 years, really, that we all realized that there was this guy who was amazing. And, you know, people would often talk about, like, Kurt Hennig, NAWA, and Kurt Hennig in Portland and how much better he was. Well, Martel was on that same path, and he was so much better than Kurt Hennig in AWA. It was incredible. I mean, Hennig was great there, but like the Martel Bockwinkel matches were amazing. I like their average match more than I like the average Henning Bockwinkel match. I think obviously the 60-minute draw was amazing, but yeah, like you guys said, one of the most fiery, some of the best fiery comebacks. I really think of that sort of Tito Santana, Rick Martel, like reevaluated babyface guys. I think that Martel is clearly the best, and he's the one for me that has sort of reached that Ricky Steamboat level, and I can't quite put him past Steamboat yet, but he's right there with him, and I never would have said that 3 years ago. I would have thought that was crazy. Like, how did we miss this?
Yeah. The reason we took so long was because of how footage was found, right? So if you think about Martel, his best work in the late 70s and the 80s was Portland AWA. Of course, later on, he went to Montreal, the Montreal footage that started coming out in the 80s. That was a big deal. Pat LaPrade, of course, had talked about that in his book. But, I mean, that's where he worked. It was Portland AWA, Montreal. And really, after the footage explosion with the 80s project and stuff, that's where we found all this great stuff about Martel. And it was just like a revelation. That's, you know, the same thing for Buddy Rose. It's, you know, and all that stuff. But yeah, this is, we gush about Martel because we need to make up for lost time. Let's just put that as there.
You know, I don't normally give a shit what wrestlers think about other wrestlers.
Right.
But I'm actually curious. What do you guys know what his rep was like amongst his peers, amongst the guys that he worked with? Like, was he considered like one of the best guys around, or was he just kind of like, oh, he's a solid hand?
I don't know. Like, if you think about it, like when Don Callis in 97 was like on the road to coming into the WWF, he was teamed up with Martel in like the Maritimes as a tag team to kind of be taught how to become a WWF superstar. So they obviously trusted him enough to do that.
Right.
And they always brought him in, like, when Razor was becoming a babyface, you know, he was put with Martel first. One of Shawn Michaels' first big feuds was with Martel. So there was obviously a lot of trust there, but I haven't really heard anything.
Right. Yeah. Neither have I. I never really dove into it too much, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, it's something that I would be curious, because we know the guys like DiBiase and Henning had really great reps amongst the guys that they worked with. And then someone like Greg Valentine, a lot of people say like he was very good, very solid, like not quite great. And when I watch that guy, I'm like, he's fucking great. So I wonder if like Martel kind of plays in with that too. Cause yeah, it really seemed like amongst all the kind of footage rediscoveries, he was one of the most out of nowhere guys considering how great he actually is.
So anyone who hasn't watched Martel basically.
Yeah.
But I think most people listening to this have know how great Rick Martel is. So.
Yeah.
Number two, Tim.
So, okay. This is really weird for me because now I think two things. One, you both have him at number one. Or two, you both forgot about him. So I don't know how to react when I say this.
Tim, so your number two is the Ultimate Warrior?
No!
Okay.
Triple H?
Yeah. All hail. No, my number two is Ricky Morton.
Ricky Morton is just someone that I think is great, but I have no personal connection with. Everyone on my list, I have a connection with.
Oh! Ricky Morton is
And I already had two Rickies on my list. How many Rickies can I have?
Greatest face apparel in the history of professional wrestling.
That's Dustin Rhodes.
No! No, Ricky Morton! Oh my god! No! Did you guys both leave him off the list?
He was one of my strategic, there will be no Ricky, only a Ricky.
And I thought everyone would talk about Morton. Yeah. I thought everyone else would have him, so I was like, I'll put my favorite.
I'll lead off the discussion then, because I was the only one brave enough to put him up. He literally perfected a role in a way that, I mean, and obviously has revolutionized tag team wrestling and has for almost four decades now. It's called the Ricky Morton role for a reason, getting shine, getting heat, whatever you want to call it.
an incredible seller, an incredible bumper, really good, kind of like fiery babyface offense. So Ricky Morton hope spots are one of my favorite things ever in professional wrestling. When he thought that he had enough because he saw an opening and he'd just like jab away at something, you know, to try and come back. And then he'd like bounce off the ropes for a big move or something and then get immediately clobbered. I just lived and died on that stuff, man. He also is a tremendous, like in a tag match setting, especially great, unique opening offense. One of the best flying head scissors of all time, which is one of the great babyface moves, and more people need to use it. He is, to me, as quintessential babyface, is the guy who obviously now is my number one, because you guys have both mentioned him, and I'm basically giving it away, and I'll talk about him when I get there. But Ricky Morton, to me, is the best face tag wrestler in history, and I have to have him this high.
Yeah, he's obviously great. The problem I have with Morton is that the first time I saw Ricky Morton was in 1998.
Oh, that's not good.
Feuding with the new Midnight Express of Bob Holly and Bart Gunn.
Yeah, that's not Ricky Morton.
And everything I've seen of Ricky Morton since has been in the past. So he's like this Southern rocker, which is like nothing that I have any connection with at all, being, you know, a Canadian in the 80s, like the just nothing I have contact with at all. So it's like I understand he's great, I see that he's great, it's just there's nothing personally connecting with me. And like if I was doing a legit list, like if I was sending this in for like the greatest wrestler ever, but it was like the greatest babyface ever, obviously he'd be really high, but this podcast is not serious, so Ricky Morton does not. It didn't get put on there because I knew someone else would have him too. So.
Yeah,
that's why he missed my list. I mean, in addition to being a great single or a great tag wrestler, he was a great singles wrestler. I think if he had never been a tag wrestler, he still probably could have made this list. You know, he unbelievable connection with the crowd. One thing, you know, I mentioned degree of difficulty with like Terry Funk and Giant Baba, and Ricky Morton actually had a lot of that too. The fact that he was able to get over as a heartthrob and be as ugly as he was, is really amazing. So he had that working for him. It's just like, oh, whoa, how did he make this happen? That's really, truly special charisma. Great in-ring worker, underrated promo, one of the best Flair opponents.
Their opponents.
Yeah. Ricky Unbelievable.
Ricky Morton as singles wrestler coming as close as he did to actually beating Flair for the belt is still one of the greatest things that happened during Flair's NWA title runs in the 80s. Like, it's there was – so when people were upset in 87 – that it was Ronnie Garvin that got the belt, there were a lot of people who were thinking, like, why didn't Ricky Morton get the belt? Like, I mean, like, there that was an actual sentiment, and I totally would have said yes to that. I really would have, so.
Yeah, Ricky Morton's great. But like Steven said, if this was, like, a GWE sort of situation, but for babyfaces, I mean, he would have probably been in my top five, but I knew we'd make it, and that's why I made my no Rickies, only Ricky criteria.
That's a great criteria. So Elliot, who is number two that's not Ricky on your list?
My number two, it's not a Ricky, but it's a Rey. That's where I've got Rey Mysterio Jr. Yeah, I think he's the best working underdog babyface ever. You know, no shame in putting Ricky Morton number one, but I would have Rey Mysterio Jr. as the best underdog babyface. Longevity, you know, he's been great forever. I mean, he was able to accomplish a lot of different things as a babyface and as an underdog babyface. Like, he got over initially because he had the most amazing, awe-inspiring high spots you've ever seen. And then as he slowed down and aged, a lot of his connection remained because he was such a great seller and so good at timing high spots. They might not have been as spectacular, but he used them a lot better. And so, you know, that showed a lot of growth as a worker and able to stay relevant as a babyface as decades wore on, and fans changed and grew up and new fans came in. Yeah. I mean, he's everything that Ricky Morton was, only he was a singles wrestler and he did it for longer, at this point, at a higher level, I would say. Yeah, you could easily put Ray Jr. number one. No shame in that. It's Ray Jr. He has to be on there. He would be my number one underdog babyface, though.
Yeah. That's a great call. Great call.
Yeah.
I think we've all talked about Ray Jr. So now it just leaves number ones.
Right.
So, I guess I'll go first. My number one was actually number seven on Elliot.
I can't believe it. I'm so surprised that he made it this high. I'm so surprised. Yeah.
So do you know what it is, Tim?
No, I don't, because I missed this part. So this is the surprise. Tell me.
It's Atlantis.
Oh my god, that's insane!
So awesome. That makes me so happy.
Oh my god, that is insane!
How is that insane?
Oh my god.
It's Atlantis.
Oh man. Okay, so go ahead, because then I'm going to talk about Atlantis, cuz so I think Steven, like, you and I are like I mean, I think Elliot is too, but we're all absurdly high on Atlantis. Like,
yeah.
Absurdly. Yeah, like a lot of people don't think that highly of him, and it's just like, or in relative to other quote-unquote high-end luchadors, but man, that sounds awesome.
If we did GWE again, he'd be like 15 for me. Like,
oh no, like I had him. I think I had him higher than that.
I love Atlantis.
I need to look at this now because I'm going to bring it up. But go ahead and talk about Atlantis, please.
Yeah. So there's never been a wrestler that I can watch a match of, especially when his mask is on the line, that I'm more invested into the match than him. Like when Atlantis's mask is on the line, I am literally sitting on the edge of my seat, like biting my nails, because I don't want him to lose his mask, because I'm not, like, it must be because he's such a great babyface, because, like, no other Santo's mask, like, it doesn't affect me. LA Park, like, no other luchador who's really great, their mask is that important as Atlantis's. And he's been doing that from the 80s. Till today. And it's just ridiculous how the connection he has with the crowd. You talk about that. Like, you think, like, people who don't watch Atlantis mask matches might not know, but, like, think about the Undertaker streak and then, like, pump it up by, like, 100.
That's a great comparison.
Like, it's ridiculous how important and how loved he is in Arena Mexico. And, you know, he's a great technical wrestler. He's a great high flyer. Not so much today, but he can still have the great matches. He had a great mass match, not this year, but last year, against Sombra, I believe. Yeah, I can't remember. But it was a great match as well. And it's just, he's just an unbelievable worker, and I don't understand when people don't talk about him as an all-time great. Who could have a five-star classic in 2000, a five-star classic in 2013, the way he did? And both of
those... And 1984! And 1984!
Like, these were way past his prime matches, right?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he did it in over such a large period of time is really amazing. I mean, yeah, he was past his prime by 2000, but it's amazing how far past his, like, he's ridiculous. Sorry, keep going.
Well, no. So Steven, in the Greatest Wrestler Ever poll, so you had him at 78.
It's way too low.
The field had him at 74.
What?
I had him at 36.
Okay.
But well, I think I had him at 46.
Yeah, no.
Well, I had him at 46.
In 8 years, when we do it again, he's going to be like 25 or 20.
Yeah, he's like a top 15 sort of candidate for me at this point.
Well, to finish off in Atlantis, just because, so he is in my favorite Lucha match of all time, which is the Viano 3 match. And that match, like,
it's even, 6 stars to me now.
Here's, exactly. But so this is great. So I don't know if you guys know about the PWO 2K project that's going on.
I'm watching all the Lucha for that.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
But one of the things that is a part of that is the build up to that match.
And it's so good. Every week. Incredible. It's so good. It's
supposed to be insane. And now it's now I have to watch this stuff. Because one of the things that's underrated about Atlantis is he's a tremendous trios wrestler. He's one of the great trios technicos of all time. And that's really unique because, you know, there's a lot, like some of the things in like your Negro Casas and your Santos is that they're great as singles workers in a lot of ways. Their death matches are thought of as singles workers. And Atlantis has a lot of great singles workers, but on a constant basis, Atlantis knows how to work as a technico in a trios match as good or better than anybody that I've ever seen. And I think it's a completely underrated part of his game and something that I think if you want to go back and listen to 10 hours of me talking with Steven, that I think I vouch for heavily on him in the sense that he really brought a total complete technico game that I think only a couple of people could do better than him.
Yeah. And like even today, like, at Fantastic Mania, people are really promoting his match with Rush as one of the best matches on the tour. And super old Atlantis working in New Japan against Rush is garnering babyface sympathy. So that's just great.
So and just for clarification, so I had Casas at 6, Santo at 7, Ray at 10, El Dandy was at 17. Eddie would be 18 if you consider him a lucha worker, although he worked in the United States and Japan more than he worked in Mexico. And then the next guy down was Atlantis. So I had him as my 5th ranked luchador of all time. Yeah. I mean, like he was that good to me. I really liked him that much. So
Yes, he didn't make your top 10 babyface list.
Yeah, and I totally – and that was the thing. I had such a hard time with Lucha on this list because I just thought so much of what a baby I really wanted this to be about virtuous baby faces for me, and I thought about the Southern archetype more than I think of like the things that you guys thought about, and my list shows for that, so my bad.
No.
Well, I kind of think of Atlantis as one of those virtuous baby faces. Yeah. You know, he was the idol of the niños, idol of the children. He's really like one, like, you know, Lucha, there's even more than any other style. It has the real superhero versus supervillain feel to it with the way they present it. And so I do look at Atlantis as like one of the all time, just like pure, like whenever I hear pure babyface, he's just one of the guys that I think of, just because of like, you know, he was one of those guys where no matter how rough you were with him as a rudo, he would always fight back with skill and with grace. He would rarely stoop to your level. And I'm so glad that you mentioned the trios work, Tim, because that's something that, like, whenever I look at trios match lists, like, it's so hard to tell what's going to be great and what's not, because when you look at a long list of random trios, so really I kind of look for just a few guys. Like, I think only like 2 or 3 people can make a trios match, depending on what the storyline is. And so if I see like Atlantis and El Dandy and El Satanico all in a trios match, like I'm going to watch it no matter who the other 3 guys are. Atlantis has just always been one of those guys where he brings the goods, even if he's not the featured player in the trios. If he's like the second technico in the storyline, and all he's supposed to do is kind of come in and hit flashy spots, he's going to do it, and they're going to always look incredible. So he had that consistency, and in addition to those great big singles matches that we all know, the Viano match, the Ultimo Guerrero match, the stuff from the 80s against Satanico, the Blue Panther matches, I mean, Atlantis is awesome. I was so excited that you had him at number 1. I'm really surprised you didn't have somebody else there. That's just fantastic. Criminally underrated wrestler.
Plus, like, think about a hero dude comes out with a mask and a cape. Like, come
yeah,
on.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And at 52, 53 is still kind of just like, yeah, he's that good. Him and Negro Cass is just unbelievable to me that they're still going like they are. So,
and I'll tell you this. If Atlantis does lose his mask one day, like, there's a good chance I'm going to cry. And I don't think I've ever cried watching a wrestling match, but I will if Atlantis loses his mask. I'm pretty sure about it. So,
yeah, and I think his mask now is not Santito level, but it's very close. Like, it's, I think it's a mask that now can't be taken because I can't think of a Rudo. Like,
he
Rush
did an interview the other day where he said he wouldn't put his mask on the line against hair just versus mask because it's too important.
True That's statement. Awesome. That's a great awesome. Call. You know why? Because he knows that if he had to face Rush, that there's a chance that he might actually have to lose that. So when Rush loses his hair, it's going to be the greatest thing in the history of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Bald Rush is going to be the freaking most phenomenal. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. So, okay, Tim. Who do you got number one?
That Ricky Steamboat guy. Look, oh, I mean, I know I'm a... Yeah, that boy, Al. Yeah. I mean, look, guys.
No, he's great. You can't fault Steamboat at number one.
Look, lifetime baby face. Literally lifetime baby face. I mean, the smoothest damn baby face in the history of wrestling. You know, and he did a lot of different parts as a baby face well. And it's so funny. He's like, you're trying to pick all these things that it's like, oh, what was Steamboat great at? It's like, well, basically everything a babyface is supposed to be great at.
Everything.
So was he a great seller? Yes. Did he have great offense? Yes. Was he a great bumper? Yes. Could he work tags? Yes. It was like, think about all these things that you incorporate into a babyface professional wrestler. Was he like a white meat babyface that every, like, the women loved and that guys looked up to? Like, it's just, you know, the work is something else, but his babyface persona, while I think a lot of people, as of course the times changed, were looking more towards your Ricky Choshu types, your renegade types, had to throw that in there, Elliot. It was like, you know, he's still, if you look back on it, I mean, for 20 years, he was the kind of the pinnacle of being a babyface. I mean, I know Dusty Rhodes got great reactions too, but like, I mean, Ricky Steamboat was so viscerally loved in all these great settings, whether it was more cartoonish in the WWF, whether it was as this guy who knew how to bleed, knew how to fight. And this was the other thing too, that people always forget about Ricky Steamboat, is that he was you want to talk about a babyface who knew how to fight back? Ricky Steamboat fought back. He didn't take shit from anybody. And that is something that a lot of babyfaces, they know how to sell. They know how to really let the heel get over. And then they get their win and that's it. But like the final conflict build, all the stuff with Flair. You want to talk about the Savage build with Steel and Elizabeth. You want to
Morocco feud.
Yeah, the Morocco feud. You know, the feud with during Wrestle War, Sting Squadron versus the Dangerous Alliance. Think about all these different things that he was able to show as a babyface that he was going to be fighting back against all this injustice that he saw. And he stood for something and he didn't give ground on it and he kept doing it. And it's just like, that's the most baby face thing ever. And I just, he was the first name I typed on this list. It was no chance anybody else was going to be my number one. And so there you have it, Ricky Steamboat.
I feel like if you were building a baby face, the perfect baby face in a lab, it would just be Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. It's just.
Yeah. I mean, he's perfect. You wouldn't change it. Didn't Russo try and turn him heel and then he like quit after a day or something?
Probably.
Didn't that happen on TNA? Like he tried to turn him into like a heel commissioner and Steamboat just never came back.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Thanks, Vince. But like, oh yeah, dude, even so, you guys remember when he was the ROH guest ref?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, that was great. He started arm dragging everybody.
The CM Punk mini feud they had was great.
Like,
mean, he, like, that was incredible. Like, I mean, of course, and then the Jericho stuff. It's like, I can't say enough, and I just gush anytime it comes up. Ricky Steamboat is a babyface. He's always going to be that guy for me. He, you know, and so, well
even,
done.
Even when he's the ref for that low-key Daniel Bryan match in 2001. Yeah,
that's right.
He totally comes off as a lovable babyface referee. Like, and it enhances the match that he's there and, like, you think they're so, like, you think more of the workers because Ricky Steamboat's right there and, like, reacting like a babyface would, you know, just like, holy shit, look at these guys.
Yeah, that's probably going to be most people's number one, to be honest, Tim. So,
but I know, but you picking Atlantis popped me. That's a great thing. So, and now because he was our gracious guest and it was his idea to do this in the first place. Elliot, what is your number one?
Hold on a second.
Oh, yes.
You know who we haven't mentioned?
Oh, no. Oh, who are we all?
I might be about to mention him.
Onita?
No way!
Oh, did you say Onita? Yeah. No, it's not Onita. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, God, I was going to... Oh, that would pop me more than Atlantis. Because we started talking Terry Funk, and I was just like, oh, man, Onita. Oh, yeah, God.
Onita is such a great baby face.
He was my, you know, when we lost Tim and I told you that Atlantis was my number seven and you said, oh, we'll wait and talk about him later. And I said, do you want me to switch him out for somebody? And you said, no, it's okay. Onita was the guy I was going to switch him out.
Yeah.
That's how close he was to making it.
Yeah. That's good. Oh, man. So who's your number one then?
My number one, and since he's the last person we'll talk about, and therefore he is officially the greatest babyface of all time.
Son of a bitch.
El Hijo del Santo.
Yeah, I knew this was coming. So I get two Lucha Technicos and Ricky Steamboat. Okay, we did pretty good.
Yeah. You know, everything that you could say about Atlantis, right down to coming out with a mask and a cape on. It holds true for Santo. I think Santo was more consistent. I actually think his best matches are better, as great as the Viano 3 matches and whatever you want to say for Atlantis. I mean, the Negro Casas feud, the Espanto matches, stuff against La Parca, the One Worlds Collide tag. I mean, just Santo never lets me down. He's one of the most formulaic wrestlers ever. That's a criticism that a lot of people have for him, but, like, I don't care at all because his formula is so wonderful and he hits his spots so perfectly every single time that I'm happy to just see the formula match from Santo. Talking about connection with the crowd, I mean, he has that like anybody else. You know, the fact that that he was able to live up to his father's legacy as much as he was able to is really impressive and really says a lot to how easy it was to get behind him. I mean, just I look at something like the Espanto mask match from 1986, where in between falls, little kids are running up and patting him on the back and trying to shake his hand and shit like that. Like, that's a baby face right there. Like, he's the ultimate superhero. Just, I think the mask and the cape, it's all perfect. The high spots that he uses where he's just, it's these smooth Superman topes that always look perfect every time.
Yeah, he's got the best tope of all time.
I love
Shocker. I thought Shocker peak tope, the bullet tope, is one of the greatest things ever, but Santo's tope is just, it's poetry.
It was like he was a diver diving in a swimming pool perfectly, right. You know, like it's incredible that he was able to make it look like that every, like, it defied gravity to me. You know, classic technical wrestler, classic brawler, trios, singles matches, whatever you wanted, tag matches. He even has an all-time great heel turn that was an all-time great turn, but he was such a great babyface, it didn't take, and nobody could understand why fuck it didn't take.
Which made the Negro Casas match that much funnier.
Exactly.
By the time that match happened, he was so over as a babyface that Casas had to turn mid-match to be the heel. Like, yeah.
Like, it's like... you know, we've got that the best turns in history thread on PWO right now, and somebody brought that one up, and it's like, yeah, it's definitely like one of the best, most well executed, like incredible turns in wrestling history. And 3 weeks later, he's a babyface again because El Cito, it's El Hijo del Santo. How could you ever cheer against him?
Right.
Like he's Rey Jr. But he's El Santo. You know, like he's everything. Like. When you said that you wrote Ricky Steamboat down and he was always number one, for me, it was Hijo del Santo. Even if it was like turning it in for a GWE type list and I included my Steamboats and my Mortons, Santo would still be number one no matter what.
And I 100% get that. And like I said, Lucha was kind of a blind spot to me because I was trying to figure out like how I would treat these guys, like your Casas, who I think was a tremendous babyface too. Like, I know a lot of people like him as a heel, and he's kind of like this really great kind of smart-ass heel, but babyface Negro Casas is still one of the best babyfaces of all time. I really kind of think him and Terry Funk are similar in that way.
Yeah.
But Santo, to me, like, I think that that's a tremendous oversight. You have convinced me. I feel bad now. but, like, I also think that it speaks to both your guys' love of Lucha. And Lucha is still something I love, but I think I've only really hit the high spots, so to speak, with that. And I really haven't gotten too much into Lucha outside of like the peak period CMLL when Mystico was on top, the big matches of the 90s, you know, stuff like that. I haven't really touched on the week to week. But like Santo in big matches is like, he's the most, you know, he's a great babyface. And I think one of the things that was tough for me was, I was looking for kind of a personal connection. And because I haven't really gone back and watched a lot of Santo lately, I don't think it stuck with me. I really thought viscerally of who were the people that came to mind first. And now I feel bad that he didn't. So you have that.
He was one of the first, like, I wrote down like 16, 20 names and he was on that. And, he got weeded out, but yeah, he like, if I was making a real list, he'd probably get in there because damn, he's so good.
I thought he was gonna be your number one, Steven. Like, I thought for sure that he was gonna be on your list.
He's close, but I had to get Dorada in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just look at, for me, he was always going to be number one because I really wanted a luchador number one, not just because I love the style, but I think it's the biggest stark contrast of presentation in terms of heels and faces. Like it's so overt and over the top in terms of like cartoony hero versus villain, to the point where they are wearing masks and capes, and you know, El Santo had tons of movies made after him as a literal superhero. So it was weird to not have a luchador. Like, I had to have a luchador number one. And it had to be Santo because he's just the defining Technico.
So, that's a great point. I'm kind of at a loss that I didn't put him on my list. But you know what? Steven had a couple of those. So I'm okay. Elliot beat us all. We knew he was going to beat both of us. So one thing I wanted to bring up before we kind of wrap this up is that I noticed that none of us had these four quote unquote traditional baby faces on any of our lists, right? None of them.
Which four?
Hogan.
Yeah.
I had Bruno. Him, but then I scratched him off because he's a racist.
But think of this. Hogan, Bruno, The Rock, and Steve Austin. Now, you had Choshu, Elliot, and you talked about how Choshu and Elliot, or Choshu and Austin, very similar in nature. Onita, I think, is very much in that realm as well.
Onita, I see, is Dusty.
Right, but yeah, he's probably more Dusty-ish, although he has the Renegade persona, I guess you would say.
Yeah, especially early on, like in the formation of FMW. Yeah. Right.
And I'll ask you this first, and I'll ask Steven this. What do you think makes the guys like Austin, Rock, Hogan, Bruno, those ilk that were successful baby faces in their own rights, not fit into this hierarchy? Is it because you wanted to highlight others, or because you think that that style of babyface, while over all that stuff, isn't what you kind of look for personally in a babyface?
No, not at all. Like I've got I think borderline legitimate reasons for all of them not making it. Bruno was a footage thing. If we were thinking about this in terms of totally just drawing importance, taking work rate, not completely out of it, but making it less important, then I absolutely would have been arguing for Bruno, but I just haven't seen enough, honestly. And so I didn't feel comfortable. He was somebody that made my like initial guys to think about lists. And then as I was looking at his name, I was just like, I just haven't seen enough. Like when it comes to, time to talk about him, it would really just be anecdotes based on what I've heard or read other people say. So that's what held him. Stone Cold didn't make it for me because I thought I just assumed that one of you guys would put him on. He was one of those guys. Rock is somebody that I thought about. What held him back is that it just wasn't long enough. That was a longevity factor. Like if you look at all of my guys, like I have Giant Baba and Atlantis and Hijo del Santo. You know, these guys, Jerry Lawler, these guys that have 20, 30 year long careers where they're baby faces for the most of it. Rock, you're really looking at like a 6 year long career where he was a baby face for like 2/3 of it. And also, I didn't think I could justify I really love his movies as criteria. Like, I think The Rundown is super entertaining, so he's on my list. And then Hulk Hogan, racist, number one.
Right. You know. Yeah.
But also just the crowd turned on him. That's one thing. Like, and the crowd never really turned on Hijo del Santo or Rey Mysterio Jr. in a way that they turned on Hogan, where they were ripping his merchandise on TV. You know, there are pockets of time where people like, you know, there's that. The Daniel Bryan Rumble where Ray got booed, but that really didn't have anything to do with Ray.
Yes.
Whereas Hogan, it was just, fuck this guy, get him out of here. And then also just, I thought about NWO too, where he had such a major heel run that was so important that I kind of held him off because I wanted guys that were more remembered as baby faces, which is crazy because it's Hogan. But when you combine that with the whole racism thing and then the fact that I don't think he's as good of a worker as anybody else on my list, just, you know, he didn't make it.
Okay. And then, Steven, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, Hogan, racist, but I put Goldberg kind of as that version. And Goldberg's run is shorter, but I kind of like it better as, like, the dominant babyface. The Rock was always kind of a jerk. Like, even as a babyface, he was still, like, sexually abusing women and like abusing
picking on Michael Cole.
Yeah, he's kind of a misogynist asshole all the time.
Okay.
So, all
right.
Yeah, this is getting good. Steve Austin, you know, he beat us.
Another racist.
That's not the reason. Steve Austin is just he probably should have made my list, but like a lot of his first babyface run, to me, he was a heel. So it was kind of hard to like think of him as a baby face even when he was one, because he was still kind of a heel to me,
right?
Because he was facing Brett and Brett was the face,
right?
And who's the other one?
And then Bruno
just the footage,
right?
Footage.
Okay, so I wanted to bring that up because like if you think about, and Savage didn't make any of our lists either, and so I wanted to point that out, is that these are guys that when you think of great baby faces, you know, in the WWE ilk, like people think about, oh, who's a great good guy? Like, oh yeah, Hogan or
I guess
Savage,
I should have put Savage,
you know, like,
over Christian or something.
Savage off for me is I think Savage is better as a heel.
Oh
I
no,
think.
Like Savage's Memphis run to me was just like, yeah, nope, he's way better as a heel. I know it, the Macho King stuff, not so much, but Macho Man turning heel when the Mega Powers exploded is great Savage too. But I just do agree that like I think that what's interesting is that if you think about baby faces and what WWE now portrays as baby faces back in the day, that the actual true idea of a baby face, I think we have all kind of come to an agreement that it's very kind of almost primal. It's like this idea of very raw, like it can't really be created. It is something that the wrestler evokes. It is something that can't be evoked onto the wrestler. So guys like The Rock, guys like Austin, who got over because they were quote unquote cool, the baby face there isn't the same as a guy like a Santo or an Atlantis or a Steamboat or a Morton or a Goldberg, who was just a baby face in general. And that was his persona. That's how he portrayed himself. And I wanted to bring that point out because, while I think that we get kind of thinking about certain archetypes, I talk about the virtuous baby face as my favorite baby face. You talked about the renegade baby face, all that stuff. Like, that's a real thing. Like, those baby faces, because we hold them in such high regard, it's like, well, you need to live up to that standard. And that's a hard standard to come by, as you see with this list, is that we do have some similarities, but they all very much are of similar ideas in that they are, you know, trying to evoke a positive reaction from their actions and their actions only. And they're basically waiting for everybody else to play off of them. And I think that's where we kind of found here. That's the baseline for really being a good babyface.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, babyfaces. Let's just run down our list really quickly before we head out of here. Does everyone still have their list?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my number 10 was Masquerita Dorada. Number 9, Goldberg. Number 8, Christian. Number 7, the 1-2-3 Kid. Number 6, Ricky Steamboat, Daniel Bryan, and Tito Santana. Number 5, Mysterio Jr. Number 4, Jerry Lawler. Number 3, Bret Hart. Number 2, Rick Martel. And number 1, Atlantis.
Mine was Jerry Lawler 10, Bayley 9, Daniel Bryan 8, Tito Santana 7, Kerry Von Erich 6, Dustin Rhodes 5, Rick Martel 4, Rey Mysterio 3, Ricky Morton 2, and Ricky Steamboat 1.
And mine is Dusty Rhodes number 10, Paraguayo number 9, Ricky Choshu number 8, Atlantis number 7, number 6, Carlos Colon, number 5, Giant Baba, number 4, Jerry Lawler, number 3, Terry Funk, number 2, Rey Mysterio Jr., and number 1, the greatest babyface of all time, El Hijo del Santo.
Pretty good. So, I'd like to thank Elliot for joining us here and coming up with the idea. This was a lot of fun, and I hope people had fun listening. We'll be back WrestleMania weekend, Tim and I, and we'll be doing our top 33 favorite wrestling moments.
Yep, it'll be super fun. We hope you'll join us, and for something as big as WrestleMania weekend, we're gonna try and get this out before the traveling day so that you guys can listen to it on the plane.
Yeah, we'll put it out like a Wednesday or something.
Yes, exactly. So, and we're gonna have to do this. This is gonna be fun. We are going to be for the first time, because we're gonna be recording this when we record it. I will be in Korea.
Whoa.
Steven will be in Canada. Yes, a truly 100% international version of the Pro Wrestling Super Show.
Yeah, look forward to that.
Looking forward to it. Which is awesome, because now you get to hear the awesome theme music to this podcast, and it's from Korea. So enjoy that. Have fun.
Have fun. Have a good night, everyone.
Thanks, Elliot.
Thanks, guys. Super Junior. Show 그댈 환상을